Thanks so much for your prompt work on this issue. We're about to get to it. Just a couple housekeeping matters we need to take care of. I believe we have minutes to approve from the April 20th meeting. They're at page 3 of your materials. Is there a motion to approve those minutes?
I'll move to approve, Judge.
Chad, thanks so much. And did I see you second that, Judge Siebert? Right, you're muted, just in case you know. Okay.
I'll second it.
Moved and seconded, the minutes be approved. Any opposition to the motion? Hearing none, the minutes are approved. And I, as I understand it, at the last check, we did not receive any, and I know we need to take roll. We didn't receive any public comment?
No.
Okay, and now let's take roll. Brandy?
I'll pass that to Rose, thank you.
Rose, thanks.
Sure. Judge Conklin?
I'm present.
Mr. Finke?
I'm here.
Judge Getty? Judge Kelly?
Here by phone.
Thank you. Judge Merrifield?
Present.
Judge Siebert?
Here.
Mr. Kim, he informed us he'd be absent today. Ms. Levere?
Here.
Thank you. Mr. Riley?
Here.
Mr. Taniguchi?
Here.
Thank you. Mr. Yamasaki?
Yes, good afternoon, present.
Thank you.
All right, Rose, thanks so much. So now, having taken care of all the other matters, that gets us right to our single item for today, which is an action item to deliberate, as far as this committee goes, the allocation methodologies for civil assessment backfill for funding of 23-24. Before I open it up, I'm just considering the fact this is an open meeting, just going to give a brief background of where we are to get us into the discussion. This is our single item on today's agenda. And again, it's to address the allocation of the 2023-2024 civil assessment backfill funding. We had moved this forward to the TCBAC meeting. There was understandable requests for further attention to the matter at the TCBAC meeting. It was broken out essentially from a much larger allocation related to the funds from the TCTF. By the way, those have already moved through JBBC and are on their way to the council, but we're now breaking out this single allocation item for the further discussion that I've mentioned. So materials today, and with thanks from all of us to staff, present 4 different scenarios for this civil assessment allocation. And that I also thank numerous voices outside of the committee. The work done by all of us, in particular Chad, has really been diligent in trying to garner comments and input from CEOs throughout the state, and that those conversations have been more than lively and active, and we do appreciate everybody's concern for this matter. We're all rowing this boat together, but in many times there's perspectives on how we should be rowing, and that's what we're doing today. So there's 4 methodologies that have been presented today to address the backfill funding concerning, and the first scenario is one that originally went to TCBAC. So that's the one that originally went forward and we're now coming back to. And that one allocates the change civil assessment backfill amount as new funding through the workload formula. That's in conjunction with other workload formula changes and an overall decrease in filings proposed to allocate the funding via the branch's equity approach. That was the first approach. TCBAC determined that the initial allocation methodology yield volatility in the civil assessments. So you all noted that in scenario one, while we were striving for equity, as we always have, it did create some volatility in the scenarios. And therefore, the 3 other scenarios were created. And I'll turn to Rose to briefly summarize those additional scenarios. Rose?
Great. Thank you, Judge. So good afternoon, everyone. As you know, my name is Rose Lane. I'm a senior analyst with Budget Services. So the item on today's agenda is to consider allocation methodologies for the $100 million civil assessment backfill funding for 23-24 and ongoing. So this should take into account the $10 million decrease to the allocation from 22-23 and the additional $2.5 million approved by the Judicial Council to fully fund Santa Clara Superior Court's annual debt service obligation. So to provide a little bit of debt background, the original 110 million civil assessment backfill allocation methodology for 22-23 was reduced by the 48.3 million maintenance of effort, reduced further to fund the remaining civil assessment obligations, and the remainder was allocated via the workload formula methodology as outlined on page 5 of your materials. The workload formula methodology was also applied to the 23-24 civil assessment backfill funding amount and is identified as scenario 1 in today's materials. The summary in attachment A highlights allocation amounts for civil assessment backfill funding and updated workload formula percentages for each of the scenarios. Scenario 2 treats 23-24 as a reduction in base funding from 22-23 and allocates the 12.5 million reduction in civil assessment backfill funding via the workload formula methodology. Overall, the scenario would reduce the allocations already made in 22-23 via the workload formula. And then next, scenario 3 allocates the civil assessment backfill amount on a proportional basis based on the 23-24 workload formula allocations as approved by TICBAC. And then lastly, scenario 4 again treats 23-24 as a reduction in base funding from 22-23, but then allocates the 12.5 million reduction in civil assessment backfill funding proportionally based on the court's percentage of 22-23 civil assessment funding. So the recommendation presented to the funding methodology subcommittee as presented on page 8 of your materials is for the evaluation and deliberation of the 4 different scenarios to distribute the civil assessment backfill in 23-24. That concludes our presentation. We now turn the item back over to Judge Conklin.
Rose, thanks so much. So just to start the discussion, and not to guide the discussion, but just to start the discussion, I'm going to turn to Chad. As I mentioned, Chad has done a significant amount of work in trying to gain or to listen to perspectives from those throughout the state, including those on our committee, about these 4 scenarios and the impact of the 4 scenarios. So with that, Chad, take it away.
Thanks, Judge. I think there, from the conversations I've had with folks, I think there are sort of 2 related but distinct considerations at play. So what I'll call sort of a threshold question is, conceptually, how are we looking at this money? And by that I mean, under scenario 1, which was the original proposal, the money is in some ways being treated as new money. And by that, I mean, we're sort of doing what we did last year, which is taking the entire amount minus the MOE and the debt service and running the entire amount through the workload model. And so in doing so, it's treating it as a new allocation of $100 million. So that's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is, We have known since last year that last year's 110 was going to go to 100 this year. That has been known. And so rather than treat this as new money, we should only be looking at the gap. We should be treating it as a reduction. And in doing so, we should only be looking at the gap. So the $10 million gap from last year to this year, plus the additional $2.5 million for the debt service. And so that's part of the discussion that's out there, and there are different perspectives on how we should be looking at it. But there has been a lot of discussion, and I think feeding into the second consideration, Judge, which you've already identified, which is trying to balance equity, which is always foremost in the branch's mind, with stability, which is also one of the stated principles behind the model. And I think there was I will call it an expectation out there that this money was going to be treated as a this was going to be a reduction. I think that's what was in a lot of folks' mind was, okay, it's going to go from 110 to 100. So we're only going to be talking about that gap. And I think the initial proposal that came out of TICBAC, which is now scenario one, because it unexpectedly for a lot of folks treated it as new money, that then I think in a lot of people's mind exacerbated the volatility aspect, because a lot of people weren't expecting to see such large swings from last year, because in their mind they were thinking this is just a $10 million reduction. So somehow the branch will allocate out that reduction, we'll all take a hit. And so that those are sort of the conversations that I've had in talking to various folks and kind of what's out there. And that, as you know, Judge, is what then informed the different scenarios that have been presented, sort of one and three treated as new money and run the whole thing through the model, two and four treated as a reduction and just run the reduction through it through the model and or pro rata. So does that sort of help to frame it up?
It does for me, and obviously open to questions. I just wanted, so Judge Getty could not be with us today. She had a mandatory, she had to speak on behalf of her court at a bar meeting. But as she would have contributed to this meeting, she forwarded me her comment and asked me to read her comments to the members. It's very brief. I'll just read that. This is her email to me as of yesterday. As we discussed, while I'm in favor of the goal of equity, I'm concerned that scenario one presents too great of a swing in civil assessment income in one fiscal year for many courts, and the unexpected forecast does not permit our court executives ample opportunity to plan. She then provides the example, San Mateo would receive a $3 million boost while San Joaquin would lose $1 million from last year's allotment. Orange County would receive a $6 million boost while San Bernardino would lose almost $3 million. She continues, I'm interested in examining this methodology and how these results could arise in the immediate future, and with the benefit of additional information regarding overall budgets and metrics to prevent significant swings in one fiscal year that cannot readily be absorbed by courts. Candidly, I was surprised that the three-year average WFM WAFM method workload funding methodology, I shouldn't say WAFM, pardon me, resulted in such incredible swings in just 1 year. She concludes, I am in favor of scenario four with the proviso that no court should receive greater than 100% and any overage should be returned for proportionate redistribution to other courts. Scenario four gives us the opportunity to further examine methodology and better plan for the future. So those are her comments that she would have shared with us as a member would have shared today. And with that and Chad's comments, here we are. So, David, did you have a
comment? Yeah, I just unmuted. I wanted to chime in. I was looking for the raise a hand button. So, I trust, as you just said earlier, this has probably gotten quite a bit of attention by all of the members, maybe more acutely than some of the other stuff. But it's always very important stuff that we're reviewing and very difficult. I would start by saying that none of the scenarios are great for all of us collectively, and that we have a very difficult decision that we have to provide and recommend to JBBC and the council. But I want to just point out two details that I think are really important for us to consider in whatever decision that we're going to be making. When the funding methodology in original form was created, one of the things that was very stark was the gap between courts that were below a particular average and the courts that perhaps were above that particular average. It was very, very significant. And we were struggling to find out what it is that we would do to try to close that gap. And the percentage of where we all sat, or all of the courts sat, was something that we were always mindful of recognizing whatever decision that we had made. And there was a commitment made back then, and I think continues on today, to try to increase the amount of funding that those courts were receiving that were below the average to the average. And I think the average today sits at around, 94%, somewhere in that ballpark. And I'm hopeful that we can continue to consider the commitment that we're making to close the gap between those people below the average and going forward, increasing them closer to the average. When we implemented that change, we obviously recognized that we needed to reduce the volatility, and that's the reason why it was rolled out over a five-year period. And I still believe that you know, reducing volatility is something that we should continue to examine. But we also have to recognize that our work has to continue in increasing the funding to those courts that are below the statewide average. And it's very important now for us to keep this in mind, because back then and up until recently, the way to close that gap was an appropriation from the legislature that was general increases. So we had adopted a policy that we would take 50% of that general allocation to increase those courts below the average, and then distribute the remaining based on a percentage/funding formula. And so that obviously helped us gain a lot of ground. Today, and I'm very pleased that we have this, is that we have an inflationary adjustment that goes to everybody. There is no monetary appropriation that we get that addresses this disparity between courts that are above the average or below the average. Now, wherever you are, if we don't look at this money as a vehicle to address that gap, we will constantly maintain this differential and fluctuate it based on workload. So I think that's really important for us to think about when we come up with a methodology, that there is no vehicle right now to close the gap other than the policy, the position, the decision that was made by this body and the Judicial Council in order to increase those courts below the average to the statewide average. And I think in all of the scenarios that we're seeing, there's still going to be a gap between what the statewide average is and those courts below. So we don't close the gap even with scenario one. We close the gap, but we don't eliminate the gap with scenario one. And we will continue to distribute monies to everybody. You know, if we were to pursue scenarios 2, 3, and 4, those courts that are above the average will continue to receive some monies, perhaps with the exception of those in excess of 100%. But that is something, if we're talking about equity and inequity, that we should be mindful of, whichever scenario we end up pursuing. But that said, I think it's important to know that I am hopeful that we can come up with something that reduces the volatility from year to year, but we've got to make sure that we, in my view, recognize a remedy to help close the gap between those below the statewide average and those, and the need to get to the statewide average. I will add one other point. I know that the Judicial Branch Budget Committee met yesterday, and there was some inquiry about the levels of funding that some of the courts were receiving, particularly those below the statewide average. So this is something that we need to obviously, in my view, recognize that we have to try to address something here in the course of our discussion. But beyond that, I don't have any specific recommendations, but just wanted to point those variables out.
All right, David, thank you. Other comments, thoughts? I know many of you have been talking to a lot of our colleagues throughout the state, so any input? Neil, go ahead, and then Chad.
So my one comment or a couple of comments is, you know, when you talk about the gap, I think the way you want to measure that is you don't want to see a spread where you have people that are courts that are funded below the average and be a big spread between the lowest courts to the highest courts. You want to have a spread that is as narrow as possible. I understand the issue with volatility. For some reason, and I don't know what the particulars are, but when you apply the workload formula to 23-24, there shows this big change in terms of workload. I'm sure that's probably what has happened to Orange and San Mateo is the workload. But what you want to try to do is try to maintain minimize that spread and try to minimize the volatility at the same time. And I'm not sure which of the scenarios does both of those, but that would be the most efficient and most effective way of allocating. If you can minimize the volatility, but also minimize the spread between the lowest to the highest courts.
I appreciate that, Chad. And that's a good point, Chad.
Thanks, Judge. I think David's points and Neil's points about the relative levels of equity are well taken. I think for me personally, the piece that the question I have the hardest time answering for myself is, what is our justification for treating it as new money? You know, that's the piece that I have the hardest. If we go with one or three, I think we have to be prepared to answer that question. And I have a hard time answering it because, again, we've known now since last fiscal year that this reduction was coming. And so it seems more consistent, I guess, with what we've done in the past to treat it as a reduction and then to go with two or four. Maybe somebody else has a better answer to that than I do, but that's the piece that I am stuck on.
Yep. Good point. Other thoughts, other members?
Yeah. This is Judge Sheba, but I don't know how to do the raise your hand thing, so I apologize for
you're fine. I don't either.
Yeah. Obviously everybody's points are well taken in the sense that we have two competing goals because you can't have one without the other. In other words, if you're going to, as David said, treat this money as a mechanism for closing the gap, then that is going to result in some volatility, right? And for the people who are in the, you know, on the lower end of the statewide average or below the statewide average, getting closer to the statewide average is obviously what they think is, well, I shouldn't speak for anybody. I would assume people think that that's only fair to do that. And if that results in volatility, I mean, the people who are below the average are, they don't maybe have volatility, but they are below the average, and they're below the average every single year. And unless there's some pain inflicted, at least in order to get that gap closed, the gap will never close. And I'm not sure if anybody has any idea of ways that gap could be closed other than inflicting some volatility pain. I don't know. But if the goal is to get people closer, then in order to achieve that goal, there may have to be some pain inflicted that was not really intended or desired, but it's a natural consequence of trying to close the gap.
All right, appreciate that. Chad?
Judge, if I'm not just from a technical standpoint, I know Chad wants to speak, but just see, but there is a portion of the workload formula and methodology that in the absence of new money for 2 years, there is a redistribution that does occur. So I'd maybe because there's new folks out here, I just wanted to give a little bit of history that there is a mechanism that exists that's already been adopted. Not to say that it can't be revisited, but just that there is a method that after 2 years of no new money, then there are bands and a fairly complicated process of looking at folks. And to Neil's question, and even to yours, Judge Siebert, whether you're funded above or below the statewide average can change year to year. And so depending on your filings, which drives the core aspect of what your need is, that can change from a court today being below the statewide average, and then next year, based on what their average, their funding, their filings happen, they could pop on the other side. So it is part of the method. Even with the, even with 3 years of smoothing, you can have that kind of workload change. So just wanted to put that out there as far as some points for the group to have.
Great. Thanks,
all right, Chad.
Chad?
I think also to Judge Siebert's point about, you know, sort of feeling the pain, I mean, recall that when we had this discussion last year, this was backfill money. And we had a, what I would call a robust discussion last year about what to do with that backfill money. Because, you know, remember before courts were keeping it on a one-to-one basis. And we made the decision, I think correctly last year, that to close the gap, the money should, you know, we need to decouple that one-to-one, you know, every dollar I collect goes into my budget. We need to decouple that, and the money needs to go through the workload formula to pull us closer together on equity. So I guess I would say, I think the pain was felt last year for a lot of courts. And I think that's also, I think, why some folks are reacting to the volatility issue, because I think people feel like last year was a sort of a sea change, because we had never done this before, where we took what was previously civil assessment money and put it through the workload formula. And so I think that that has maybe exacerbated some folks' feelings of volatility.
Yeah, good point. David, get your hand up.
Yes, I don't want to jump ahead of anybody else who wants to.
I didn't see any other hands, so go ahead.
Okay. So just to kind of get the conversation started, what do you think if we say, all right, we recognize that there continues to be inequity, and our goal, I think, is to help us get to a statewide average for those courts that are below it. What if we were to say, and I don't know what the numbers happen to be and how it would play out for all of the different courts, but if the scenario number one moves everybody to a certain level, it seems to me, and I'm just going to use Orange as an example. I think under scenario one, Orange's funding amount or funding level will be at 93.1. If we were to say let's use the money and bring us all up to a minimum of 92%, and then take the remaining and distribute based on whatever the funding methodology formula says we should do, that at least reduces the maintains the commitment to move us towards a standardized level, but also maybe lessen the fiscal impact. And I only use 92% as kind of a target because there's a huge difference. I think one of the courts that I saw was at 86% or something like that. But if we were to move us to a statewide average of X, you know, the average does move up for everybody, but it also helps us make progress in this commitment that we are making or we've asserted many years ago to boost everybody's statewide average and get us as close to what it is, you know, every year. And so it seems to me that maybe that's a starting point, is to use the money to bring the lowest court's funding level at a particular level, whatever the number happens to be, and then just have it go the balance through the formula-driven methodology, just to kind of get the conversation started. I'll throw that out.
I like the idea. I like the concept of it. I'm wondering about, though, David, why there isn't, as part of that, that people shouldn't exceed, for example, 100%. You know, the Judge Kelly, I think it was in her comments, said it seems like once you get to 100%, that anything above that ought to be reallocated to help that gap. And so I'm just wondering if you have any thought about whether they're, you know, you're setting a sort of a floor at 92%. What about, should there be a ceiling at 100% as an example? and that other money gets redistributed that may increase people but beyond the 92%. That's just a question I have for you.
Yeah, so the question is, I mean, one issue that we can talk about is whether the remaining money of the civil assessment goes to anybody in excess of a certain amount. That may be part of a conversation that we have. But there's already a policy that has been established that if you exceed your funding need by X percent, there's a mechanism to make an adjustment if it exceeds a certain number. So there's that piece. One nuance, unfortunately, that has made it complicated is that with the inflationary adjustment that is hopefully going to be received by the courts this year, everybody gets it. So if you're at 100%, you're going to get an inflationary adjustment. And in a lot of respects, that's good because even if you're at 100%, if you give a salary increase next that goes into effect next year and you get no new money, you're going to be at 98% funded because you're not going to be able to cover that expenditure. So, you know, I think the whole issue of, you know, whether we should exceed 100%, it's a very good one. And, you know, maybe this is something that we can talk about, whether that those dollars should go to courts that have exceeded a certain amount. I mean, that is something that you bring up a good point, and you know, I'm not prepared to advise one way or another, but perhaps tee that up as a secondary component of what we're going to be talking about, or maybe one of many components that we'll be talking about.
Yeah, those are valid points. I'm going to turn to Krista, but she had her hand up, and but I want to also, we are an extremely tight timeline here as far as getting this to JBBC and to the council. The 100% discussion, I think, is a very necessary discussion. There's other factors that come into play here about, you know, the terms used sometimes as a glide path. And so many of these courts, and as David has noted, as welcome as it is and as necessary as it is with the CPI increase, that takes more than a few courts above 100%, and to immediately cut that ignores a lot of principles we've had about giving those courts time to adjust such cuts. But Judge Siebert, just to answer your question directly, I've been in contact with staff, and this is something that we are definitely intending to circle back to as far as the FMS work plan as soon as we can, once we crack this nut and get into the next year. That being said, Krista?
Judge, I think Chad was first.
Okay, Chad, and then you?
You know what? I've talked enough, Krista. I'll let you go first.
I was just going to say, I fully support equity, and we have to bring everybody closer to the middle, to the average. My concern is the one Chad started with, is treating this as new money. And I feel like we already took the hit last year. And allocated it based on the workload model last year. And so pulling all that out and having it, that shift due to the workload in 1 year is challenging for me. So the way I see it, it is a reduction in funding, like I said, as Chad started with. So I would struggle to support reallocating the entire $46 million.
Chad, and then Judge Merrifield.
I, you know what, Judge, I'll defer my comments for now and let Judge Merrifield go.
Judge Merrifield, you're muted. There you go.
I was just actually going to say the same thing. I haven't heard an answer to Chad's question about treating this as new money. So I think two or four, and maybe leaning towards four, seem to be the best under this scenario. But I'll let Chad respond. I was just basically agreeing with Krista.
Chad?
I was just going to ask David a question along those lines. So, David, on the proposal that you made, I was sort of trying to figure out if you were talking about the whole amount or just the reduction. Just because I get your point, but I wasn't sure if you were it's back to the same question. Are we talking about new money or a reduction?
Yeah, I was thinking that we would take take a portion, whether it's 50% or something lesser, whatever the dollar amount is, to take us all to 92% and take the balance, whether if it's like 80% of the money, and distribute it using the funding formula, we achieve two things. We achieve actually three things. One, we stay committed to bringing people closer to the state, to a statewide average, whatever that number happens to be. We have a bigger piece of the pie, let's say, that we can distribute to the courts that would be the recipient of that as well. And we also, in turn, reduce some level of volatility, because if it's 50-50, then obviously there's less money that would be going around to all of the receiving courts of the other half. But if that number perhaps, I don't know, grows a little bit more than 50, maybe 60%, I don't know what the number happens to be. That's what I was referring to. Getting everybody with whatever dollar figure that amounts to get to, I don't know, 92% or something like that, and not 93, which I think is what was identified under scenario one for Orange, but taking the remainder for the distribution with maybe some limits. If you exceed 100%, maybe you're not part of that distribution, but that's what I was talking about.
All right. So again, to keep the discussion, and I appreciate all this, my mantra sort of in the past and continues to be, with all due respect to the PJs on this committee, and one of which is me, that the CEOs are the ones that are really, really boots on the ground. I don't know how many analogies I can use, down in the weeds, whatever it is, that have such an understanding of all these moving pieces. And so I struggle a little bit with my perspective of equity, which is obviously scenario one, and considering that goal of equity versus the very legitimate concern of volatility. It seems to me what we're trying to balance, and I don't know if that balance is possible, are these three moving pieces. And one is equity, two is volatility, and three, and I think as Chad has very appropriately noted, this isn't really new money. I would appreciate any perspectives that it is, but we've known this is coming, and if we use new money for a specific purpose, and that specific purpose is try to close that equity gap, but I know I'm kind of arguing now against my point of one, but if it's not new money, it can't be used for that purpose, and that's why we. When we're lucky enough to get new money, we close the gap. But if we don't get new money, we realize everybody's suffering and we have to move on. So that's where I am trying to figure out to answer Chad's question of how is this new money? And I saw a hand up.
Yeah.
And all my, oh, it was Neil?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I agree with Chad, actually. When I first thought about the civil assessment allocations, I don't see this as new money. It was new money last year. This is current funding. It's how you allocate it out. It just comes out with a bizarre allocation the way we developed this formula. If I understand correctly, scenarios one and three are with the assumption that it's new money. Scenarios two and four are the assumption that it's not new money. I would say, which one of those two scenarios, two and four, results in the fewest number of courts being worse off in terms of workload than they were last year? That would be how I would look at it, as being the most equitable way of trying to distribute the funding as if it were not new money. I think that would best balance the equity issue with the volatility issue, and also trying to come up with the most efficient alternative. Where, and when I say efficient, it means you're trying to get as many courts better off than they were last year in terms of workload.
Judge Conklin, if I can I jump in on that topic?
Sure.
If we are going to define this as not new money, then do we look at the inflationary adjustment as new money? In which case we implement what everybody is saying is that if it's not considered new money, then do we turn to the inflationary adjustment and send it through the formula such that even if you're at 100 and whatever percent, because the policy is you don't get new money, you can't exceed a certain amount if it's considered new money. So I want to make sure that we recognize the definitions that we're turning to.
I'll let Zlatko weigh on this, but yes. I don't think we can.
From a historical perspective, Judge, I believe the committee has had that conversation about whether CPI, inflationary money, should be used for the workload formula. And again, everything can be reconsidered, but 3 years in a row when we've gotten it, we've given it out to every court for their cost increases, notwithstanding. Putting that out for some new members who may not remember that this was discussed. It was a proposal to, in fact, have all of the CPI money at one point be used for the courts under the funding average. And ultimately that was determined and going forward by the council to be used for all courts.
Yeah, and I don't want to get too far afield on this. I just, my gut concern is that we have advocated that CPI comes into the branch for all courts, regardless of their workload, to address the inflationary struggles we have every year.
And that's how we've described it, Judge, if I might, just to add on, if I may, that's how we've described it to both the Department of Finance and the legislature. And so, and we've always been mindful of any of our allocations to the extent they could be perceived as impacting our ability to for future appropriation increases. We ask for equity money, we provide it as equity. If we've asked for CPI inflationary money, we do that so that it's consistent with the ask that we made of the administration and the legislature.
That would cause me some heartburn.
I agree, but I just want to make sure that we look at what we have done in the past and in our definition. And in essence, then there is no mechanism. There is no BCP that I'm aware of that asks for new money to address funding inequities. So the new methodology or the new asks that we have made and what we're receiving are very specific. What is CP? What is inflationary? We've asked for backfills for the civil assessment monies. We've asked for technology monies. There is nothing that I'm aware of that is looking to close the inequities that currently exist, which drove the WAFM, which drove FM funding methodology, if that's the new acronym FM, and so on. And so this is what we're going to have forevermore. There will be inequities because there's no mechanism to close it.
Now, that's why, David, I raised the issue of in years where there are new monies, there is the banding that exists in the methodology. So that's why I wanted to bring that up earlier, is that there are those self-adjusting processes that we have in instances where we don't have new money. So,
and if we were theoretically to treat this as not new money, would this be the second year of no new money?
This is Brandy. I would say no, Judge, because we are putting the inflationary money into the workload formula. So to that point, this is where you mentioned,
I'm confused. Judge, I thought we just said CPI was not going through. CPI was...
It's not allocated via the workload formula model, but it does count towards your workload formula funding.
I think that it's something that is worth considering. To the extent that what is the future funding requests? We treated this current year, 22-23, as a new money year. The 23-24 year may constitute that. But that's something that I think we need to talk about, as you've talked about, Judge Conklin. What are those things that now we've gone 3, 4, 5 years into the workload formula, what might be some questions that have come up since, that we need to deal with, especially like courts are at 100% or more, that sort of thing. There's a lot of now changes from where we are, given that we have the 3 years. And I'm just trying to, again, present the history and the facts for the committee to deliberate. This is a great discussion.
Sure. So, Krista, you had your hand. Krista, then I think Judge Siebert. Krista?
Thanks, Judge. Zlotko said what I was going to say, that there is still, I don't see either of these choices, you know, two or four, as stepping away from equity. I think the workload funding methodology that we have in place continues to support equity despite, you know, what decision we make today. So,
Judge Siebert, did you have your hand up?
Yes, I did. I'm trying to go back to what somebody described as a pretty vigorous discussion that we had when this whole backfill first came up last year. I do remember those discussions, and I do remember it was a good discussion. You know, people are keeping this conversation talking about, are we treating this as new money or are we treating it as a reduction? And I'm trying to remember back to that meeting we had a year ago.
Brandy, talking about 100, you have that? I think we had that.
What's that?
Brandy, yes. Brandy, are you there? You're muted.
I am here. What is it we're trying to identify specifically?
That discussion from last year about the civil assessment money, as far as, and we didn't make a, well, I don't want to. Was there a firm decision made last year about how it was going to be treated in years out?
No. No, and I'll look for a few notes that I have from that meeting, but the decision was at the time focusing the recommendation on the workload formula, the equity approach as a tried and true methodology, but also keeping it open to revisit the methodology for the current, for this funding that will be effective next fiscal year.
Yeah, so I don't have a great memory when it comes to this kind of stuff, but I do remember, I think, that there was a, you know, there was a clear discussion about, hey, there are lots of courts who are collecting this money and counting on this money, and then there's other courts who don't even collect any money. And how are we going to distribute this money to, based on the reality of some courts who are used to having this money not having it anymore? And I just remember that whole thing about the fairness of all the people who have put in mechanisms in place to do collections and to do all of this stuff. I think it was David that talked a lot about that at that meeting, because Orange had all kinds of systems in place and the expenses associated with those systems to do that. But in the end, I thought that the whole idea of this backfill was, at the time there was litigation going on, and there was a whole concept of decoupling the collections from, in other words, make sure that there's no idea that there's some incentive to impose assessments and so forth, and then try to collect them and then get the money. And that there was this whole idea of decoupling. And so, at least in my mind at the time, I don't know that we had a discussion really in detail about, is this new money or old money, but we decided what was the best way to deal with this $110 million. And to me, I'm having a hard time distinguishing why we're treating this piece of that 110 in any way different than we did a year ago. Obviously, we can rethink anything we do, but I don't remember any real distinction between, hey, this is new money or it's a reduction, that kind of discussion at that meeting a year ago. Maybe it wasn't thought about, but, or maybe I just don't remember it.
Thoughts? I too was at the meeting. I think we had so many different perspectives, pressures, and considerations. You're right, you used the word decouple. I think we recognized some courts, there's a lot of reasons courts weren't collecting civil assessments that had nothing to do with lack of effort. There were other courts that were very aggressive and collecting civil assessment that had nothing to do with them trying to get more money than other people. And so I think at the end of the day, we just decided to break the two apart. I'm not sure how much new money discussion went into it. Chad, did you have a thought on that? Or
I was just going to say, I Judge Conklin, as I recall, I think I made the motion last year to put the civil assessment money, the backfill money, through the workload formula. I can only speak to what was in my head. I wasn't at the time thinking that we would rerun it this year. But I don't know that we, I think Judge Siebert is right. I don't know that we had that discussion robustly last year.
So I don't want to, you know, we've got some time left, but we need to make some type of recommendation today. And I know we're all struggling to do what's best. And I so appreciate it. I don't hear anybody saying, pounding their fists on the table, saying we have to do this. I think we all recognize that we're trying to balance, again, I'm repeating myself, equity, volatility, and now this new money issue. So, Jin, just to maybe get a discussion in a certain direction, as much as I think scenario one and the equity approach is something that I've always advocated for, is there, if we were to go with scenario four, is there a way to tweak it to bring into a consideration of, and David touched upon this, Judge Siebert touched upon this, but is there a way, if we go with scenario four, and that is, unfortunately, compared to one, scenario four, and I know we shouldn't be numbers driven, but I think it brings as many as 8 courts underneath even 90%. I might be wrong. But anybody have any thoughts on, sometimes the beauty of this committee is its creativity. If we went with something, for instance, a scenario four, but tried to fold in an equity governor or a limitation, so to speak. Chris, I see your hands up. Do you have a thought?
Well, I'm just thinking, it isn't what you're suggesting scenario two. Allocating the reduction based on workload. So workload is still considered. However, it's allocated as a reduction and not reallocating the entire amount that's already been allocated.
It does, but I think what Judge Conklin, what you just said, it still puts courts below 90%. Right. I understand that there's some uniformity, I would say, in how the monies would be distributed. But it seems to me, if this is something that we did last year, where we took the 50-50 approach, that we should take some consideration towards maybe moving the lowest courts up to a particular number, and then it addresses the issue of minimizing the volatility and so on. Because I do think that absent the scenarios that we're talking about, no new money budget years, that we look back and see what the redistribution arrangement should be, this continues to maintain the commitment that we have towards closing the gap towards inequity. And even in scenario two, and even in scenario four, there are still going to be courts under 90%. And I think that that's something that we should be mindful of, is that this whole thing that started back in 2013 was to try to reduce the gap between courts below the statewide average toward the statewide average. And going back on something that Neil just said, is have courts been better off? I think you're seeing a lot of courts in the 90, 95, 100, and so on. Yet there's still some courts below 90. And I think that that should be given a little bit of consideration in terms of what we end up doing.
So I hate to be so numbers driven about this, but again, I'm just trying to come up with a way. So, and I don't know how the formulas work, because again, you guys are all smarter than I am. But if David suggested a floor of 92, if we worked in the formula and said, in no case shall a court be funded under 91%. So those courts in scenario four that are under 91% are brought up to 91%. And then we apply scenario four for the rest of the month. I mean, it is striking to me, and I know numbers driven is always a danger, but it is striking to me that we've made so much progress in getting courts for this year. No court whatever the 94%, it's striking. It's so good. And then to confront courts going significantly under 90% is, That's the volatility that I'm concerned about. So again, I'm just throwing it out there, especially for those folks that work the numbers every day. Is that something that's even reasonable, Chad?
I'm just trying to figure out how, I mean, again, I'm sorry if I'm sort of intellectually stuck on this, but if we're only dealing with the reduction, I'm trying to figure out mathematically how we do what is being contemplated, or if it can even be done. I mean,
exactly.
If there's some way only working with the 12.5, if there's some way working with that to do what is being contemplated, I'm not a guy who can do math in my head, so I'll stop talking when Zlatko and his team talk.
I think what that does, Chad, is disregards workload. Whatever you got last year, you just split the 12, whatever the delta is, and apply that reduction to everybody. It disregards the workload that has happened that drives the funding formula.
What? I'm sorry, what's the it if we only are dealing with the reduction?
You apply, well, I don't know what the 12.5 million, if that's what the magic number happens to be, and distribute 12.5 million to all of the courts based on whatever their pro rata apportionment is. It doesn't necessarily consider growth in filings, reductions in filings, and so on, in my view. That's just my thought. I'll let the smart people like Brandy chime in on this one.
Or Zlatko.
I'm not one of the smart people, but I will say this, that, you know, when we keep talking about this, and I know that it was a somewhat arbitrary number that David picked, 92%. Scenario one happens to be that every court is 92% or more. If you look at it, there's nobody that drops below 92%, at least my quick look at it. And, you know, I guess I'm just struggling with, it feels like we're rethinking something we thought through pretty hard last year. And if the idea is to not have anybody drop below a certain amount, scenario one actually does that, even though it seems like people are struggling with the idea of scenario one because you can't quite explain it as a reduction in the context of a reduction. But in terms of an outcome, it's pretty close to what David was suggesting in terms of not having anybody below 92%. And there are a number of them that would be at 92% for scenario one. Anyway, it's not a math thing. It's just an observation.
Other thoughts? Okay, Krista, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, so I think, as I started with, I fully support equity and getting to equity. I have from day one. I apologize to repeat myself, but I don't think either options two or four stray from that. There is methods in place to reallocate funding based on workload, to bring everybody up there. You know, I think those exist. I think, again, I struggle with the, you know, this is a reduction. So it's hard for me to see how we look at it any other way. So, you know, I don't want to stifle the discussion either, but when you're prepared, Judge, I am prepared to make a motion.
Well, this is an open committee and motions are invited at any time somebody thinks they're appropriate. So whenever you think is appropriate, Krista, go ahead.
So, okay, in that case, I would move scenario two.
Or scenario two?
Yes.
Okay. So it's been moved that scenario two be recommended to tick back to address the civil assessment backfill methodology. That's a motion. Is there a second?
This is Judge Kelly. I will move to second that motion.
Okay. So moved and seconded for scenario number two. So that gives us a discussion point. Now it's open for discussion on that motion. And I'm going to wait for a while. I know we all want to chime in here before I call for a vote. Thoughts on scenario number two?
So I understand the intent behind the motion and the second of that motion, but I do think that it does not consider one of the things that we tried to do last year with the use of that money. So I'm going to vote no on this particular item.
All right. Well, I haven't called for it yet, but that no. So okay. Was it Judge Merrifield? Go ahead.
So I just have a question for clarification on your motion. Why would you select 2 over 4? That might help me in my decision.
Sure, Judge Merrifield, and I'm open to 4 also, honestly. Reason for selecting scenario 2 was that, you know, so much discussion around equity. And if the committee, you know, is more supportive of scenario 4, I'm comfortable with that as well.
Well, we got a pending motion for 2 that's been seconded. So I don't know if you're moving to amend that, or and I saw Chad's hand up. I'm just trying to keep us all, we're all doing our best. Chad, did you have a comment?
Judge, I was just going to say, I think I'm in sort of in the same boat as Krista, which is I think 4 is the most consistent with what we have done in the past, but recognizing the equity concerns that have been raised, I don't know that we've ever allocated a reduction via the workload formula, but to the points that have been made, I would support 2. I prefer 4, but I would support 2.
Chad, if I might just, when we had the pandemic, I wouldn't necessarily say that it was, and Brandy can know this better than I do, but conceptually, when the pandemic reduction occurred, we did look at not hitting folks below the average as much as folks above the average. So there was a weighting, so to speak, those farthest away from the funding average got proportionally a lesser amount of the cut. Compared, is that right, Brandy? I think I'm getting it right, but
yes, the approach was to further protect those courts that were below the statewide average.
Fair point. Thank you,
Neil. And just so you know, we just as a matter of general policy on reductions, we've always dealt with the reductions on a year-by-year basis to assess the overall budgetary approach. So there isn't like a standard methodology to do a reduction, as opposed to like when we get new money, we generally have an approach, but when we had to affirm that there isn't a set mechanism to deal with reductions. That's why there is this debate about what's the way to do it.
Okay, Neil, did you have your hand up?
I actually just had a question. Exactly what are the differences in the calculation between 2 and 4? One says, reduction using workload formula, the other one is proportional reduction on the decrease. I mean, is the workload formula applied to the total amount of the reduction?
So scenario 2 is the workload formula methodology where it takes into consideration how folks are funded before the reduction is applied. Scenario 4 is an equal reduction from the current allocation amount for each of the courts. So it's proportional based on the amount of civil assessment backfill funding received in 2022-23.
So it has number 4 doesn't have any relationship to the workload.
Correct. Got it.
Okay, so at least right now, there's still the motion pending for scenario number 2.
I just wanted to jump in on, give my 2 cents on the motion. I'm troubled by, I guess maybe I can't get my head around this idea. Well, it's a reduction, so somehow it's treated differently. I'm having a hard time getting myself to vote for anything that's going to create a bigger gap in the equity issue. And when I compare scenario 1 to all the other scenarios, there's a bunch of courts that are going to have a bigger, they're going to be fall below where they were, where they would be under 1. And it just perpetuates the gap, at least the way it maybe that's too simplistic, but that's kind of what it looks like to me. And if the primary goal is equity, I think that equity's taken a bit of a hit with this, with these other scenarios. So that's where I'm at. Thank you.
All right. So we got to move this along. It's one, the laughter one. Any other discussion points on the motion for scenario number two? Okay, hearing none. So my typical practice is to call for a vote of nays, but I'm not going to do that here. I'm just going to ask for Brandy to do a roll call vote on this is our first consideration of scenario number two.
Conklin?
No.
Mr. Finke?
Yes.
Judge Kelly?
Yes.
Judge Merrifield?
Yes.
Judge Siebert?
No.
Ms. Levere?
Yes.
Mr. Riley?
No.
Mr. Taniguchi?
No.
Mr. Yamasaki?
No.
You have 5 no's, 4 yeses.
All right. So that motion fails. And again, I don't need to say this, but I will. None of this is personal. You guys are all putting so much thought into this and trying to crack this nut that that's a first shot at it. But it has failed. So a follow-up motion. As a suggestion, I'm not making the motion, but Krista, I wasn't sure if you were then leaning towards 4 or.
I'm happy to make that motion, Judge.
All right, so the motion is now for scenario number 4. Is there a second to 4?
I'll second that, Judge.
All right, Chad has seconded it. So now it's moved and seconded, scenario number 4 be adopted. And I'm sorry, I just got to keep track. Scenario number 2 was 5-4, correct? No and yes?
That is correct.
All right, so now scenario number 4. Any discussion on scenario? Anybody want to add anything before I call for a vote on scenario number 4?
This is Judge Kelly. It reminds me that Judge Getty's statement from the email that you read at the beginning of the meeting had to do with scenario number 4, but there was an addition in her language. If I could ask Judge Conklin just to pull that up one more time, something about sure. Over 100% yeah, being redistributed.
Her concluding paragraph, I am in favor of scenario number 4 with a proviso that no court should receive greater than 100%. And any overage should be returned for proportional redistribution to other trial courts. So number 4 gives us the opportunity to further examine methodology and better plan for the future.
So I would ask Ms. Levere if she would consider modifying her motion to include the language from Judge Getty's email.
And I don't know if we can do that. That 100%, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt the discussion. And I'm sorry she's not here to speak for herself. I interpreted that to be, we've got to address this 100% at a later time. But I think the issue here, I don't think we can go beyond the civil assessment allocation and then jump into, at the same time, all of a sudden dictating that no court can be funded over 100%.
Then perhaps I misunderstood her comment.
No, I think we're on...
If I can weigh in, one approach that we could do in recognizing what Judge Getty was going for there is focusing only on the civil assessment money. If it would, in scenario 4 is a reduction, yeah, you might, you know, discard that. Let me put this together a bit more, but going back to kind of what Chad was saying, it's difficult when you start tweaking the numbers when dealing in a reduction scenario.
And if I'm looking at it correctly, that there's only 2 courts, I think, that would be in that position.
What position?
Over 100%.
Oh, no, there's, on scenario number 4, there's 15.
That.
Yeah, but... It would be those courts that also received would have received funding under scenario four.
Right, right. The ones that actually are impacted by this funding.
Oh, okay. You're right.
And they're minor amounts. I don't know if that makes a difference to anyone, but.
Well, this is Judge Kelly again. So I apologize then for misunderstanding the comments earlier in the meeting from Judge Getty, but I do agree that the focus on this issue is the reduction versus reallocation as if it's new money. And that's why I would be supporting the motion.
And for clarification, you're right, Judge. I don't think you misinterpreted Judge Kelly. I was just trying to read them. But for clarification, you're right. If we're looking at only the courts that are getting the money, there's only two, I think, that are the getting the money would take them over 100%. Okay. So
I appreciate it. Thank you.
So there was there's Krista's motion for cert number four, and was that Judge Kelly seconding it?
I think it was Chad.
Chad did. Moved and seconded for cert number four. Additional discussion? All right, now calling for a vote on scenario number four.
Judge Conklin.
No.
Mr. Finke.
Yes.
Judge Kelly.
Yes.
Judge Merrifield.
Yes.
Judge Siebert.
No.
Ms. Levere.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
No.
Mr. Taniguchi.
Yes.
Mr. Yamasaki.
No.
Four no's and five yeses.
What's Robert's Rules of Order? What's it take for a successful motion? Is it just majority?
Yes.
So that passes. Now, a note, and we don't allow, and I just want to double check. I don't believe we allow proxies, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so I'm just out of respect for Judge Getty. Judge Getty was in favor of scenario number four, but she's not present. Though if she were, she would vote in favor of scenario number four, which would put us at 6-4. So I will now report back to TICBAC that the committee in a vote of 5-4 approved scenario number four.
And Judge, in any report that we do all the way through to the council, we will ensure that the alternatives that were discussed will be presented so that there's a full understanding of the debate and discussion, so that it doesn't appear as if there's just a single item going forward. Because certainly at TICBAC and likely at JBBC, there will be the questions that were raised today and conversations about it.
Say again. So in other words, they're going to get a full report of the discussion today.
Yeah.
And all four scenarios that were considered.
Yes.
Now, we've now passed a scenario, so mm-hmm. I don't think it's appropriate to vote on the other scenarios when we have a successful scenario that's been approved. But
right. We will represent, obviously. I mean, you'll be reviewing the materials to make sure it's there, but we will reflect the recommendation coming out of FMS going to TICBAC, but also that the other three scenarios were presented and discussed.
Right. And just be mindful of this now goes to TICBAC, and TICBAC will now engage in the same discussion we just engaged in, and then it will go to JBBC.
And then the council.
So, anybody, again, I also want to sort of center us, and I want to, this is a very small slice of the overall budget allocation. I mean, at the end of the day, this is 50 million out of, as I mentioned to JBBC yesterday, I think 2.5 billion. But I know it's important to all of us. So I don't mean to say it's just peanuts, but at the end of the day, we're still on a very, very good path.
I would agree with you, Judge. And just for the record, I'm not supportive of scenario one either. But I do think that where we have opportunities to put into play closing the inequities that I think affect, you know, many courts significantly. We're not talking about 1% off of the statewide average. We're talking about 5-6% in some instances off the statewide average. If there's a way that we can close that gap where we have some flexibility, I think that's something that should be important to all of us. And nobody likes to get cut. Clearly that's not appealing either. But I do think that, it is a good opportunity whenever we have it to close that gap. And that's, something that I talked about earlier is let's shoot for a target. And, you know, I still think that is where I'm leaning and you know, where we end up at tick back, I don't know. But as you said earlier, nothing personal. I think, it's okay to have different, viewpoints.
Yeah, I think that's the strength of this committee and TICBAC. And I think it's also a reflection of how thoughtful Budget Services was in putting this all together and giving us these four scenarios in such a limited period of time and trying to balance. These are just very legitimate factors that we're all trying to balance here. There's nothing here that is out of the norm. Nothing here where we're. Anyways, I think I've said enough.
I do, Judge. I want to say, though, that the scenarios that were driven or provided were at the direction of you and Chad. So we didn't develop these per se. We said, what would you like us to run?
Yep.
And so we present those after consultation with you and Chad. I think it's important to say we're not creating these. We are given direction. To bring these items.
Right. That's a very legitimate clarification is you didn't come up with these on your own. Chad and I and candidly Chad and the CEOs that have been in his ear and on his email since before this went to TICBAC. And I'd say that as to compliment the CEOs for being so involved. But you're right. We then presented to you these potentials and the scenarios were then presented.
I just want to say on the issue of the not personal, it isn't personal, and I would actually be really discouraged if something as important as this, and lots of other things that we talk about, if there wasn't a vigorous discussion, because then it would mean that the whole point of this committee would be meaningless. If everybody felt the same every time, then we'd all be basically redundant with each other. So I personally am encouraged when I see the debate and a split, because it means that people are being thoughtful as opposed to just going along to get along, which is, there's no point in having a committee if that's all you're going to do.
Yeah, I think, Judge Siebert, your point is well taken. Not to simplify it, I think we'd all be happy to sit down and have a beer with each other, but at the end of the day, we might have different types of beer we'd be drinking. And that's this committee, and I've been on this committee now for over a decade, and when there's tough issues to address, the opinions are valued. And that's, I think, the success of TICBAC. So rah-rah for us, but I think Judge Siebert makes a great point. We don't just rubber stamp these things. They're very thoughtful as we proceed. So, Brandy, Judge, what's our schedule?
Oh, yeah. I'll say this. There have been a number of important issues that have been raised, over 100%, years of no new funding. How do you define that? That I think this committee has its work cut out for it. With our support, we develop the work plan for the next year, I think there's going to be a lot of meetings of this committee to address those issues, which are critical, given now I think we're two sets of workload formulas, be it the WAFM and now the workload over the last decade. What are the next potential adjustments to the analysis?
And I've already asked Brandy to add to the work plan addressing courts over 100%, and now we'll ask to address to the work plan as well. The goal of no courts being under the average and balancing those two, as David has suggested. All right, so Brandy, our schedule now is TICBAC, folks, is a week from today. It's a 3:30 to 5 o'clock meeting. I'll do my best to have it over by 5. And then we get the JBBC right after that, and this has to go to the council in time for the July meeting. All right. Thank you all very much for your time and consideration in this. It's a great group. And I'll conclude as I always do. Go Dodgers. Thanks, folks. Have a nice afternoon.
You too.